Welcome to the Dan Decker Books Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Decker. This podcast is dedicated to providing my books in full, unabridged audio format. Look for new episodes every Tuesday. Now, on with the show. Lord of the Inferno, Volume 2 of War of the Fathers. Hello and welcome back to the podcast. This week we are continuing to read Lord of the Inferno. Last week we read. His initial impression had not been too far wrong. The man's neck was covered with a metallic substance that had plugged the hole that Adar had made with the Oakley dagger. After letting his finger hesitate just above it, he reached down to touch it and discovered that it did indeed feel like metal. "What new madness is this?" Adar muttered under his breath. He had killed many Hunwe today, but he had never seen anything like this. The man should have been unable to move, but instead, this metallic bandage had given him the ability to attack again. The kid had waited until Adar's back was turned. If he had put on the bandage while I had been watching, I would have shot him for sure. Adar stood as he felt a knot forming in his chest. He had been hoping that he had already seen the full range of technology they had to fight against. But the feeling slipped away as he wondered what else the Hunwe had at their disposal. And now, Chapter 3. Adar let out a sigh as he left the dead Hunwe turncoat. He had waited until the boy had stopped breathing before turning away. When his eyes rested on a nearby group of Oqui, he frowned. He had entered into a truce with one of the Oqui chiefs, but he wasn't certain the truce extended to the other Oqui tribes. As they disappeared, he wondered if all the Oqui here in Zekirani represented just one tribe or many. He was hesitant to approach them because it was difficult to predict how they would react. He was glad they were more concerned with killing the Hunwe than doing anything else. Based on what he knew of them, if the Oqui wouldn't have had the Hunwe to deal with, they would have been fighting one another. He tried to locate an Oqui chief, but their method of disguise left little with which to distinguish them. They all looked like walking bushes. There were some subtle differences in the camouflage, but he wasn't sure if that meant anything. Markings on a face here, feathers on hands there. It was probably clear as day to the Oqui, but he couldn't make any sense of it. He made as if to head over to the closest group, but came to a stop when he saw they were now heading in the opposite direction. He considered trying to catch up to another group, but it was preparing to leave as well. As he looked over the grounds, he realized there wasn't a metal man in sight. He had only seen them when they had hurled themselves off the roof of the town hall, but he'd been too preoccupied at the time to spend much time studying them, what he wouldn't have done to get a closer look. It annoyed him to think that the Oqui had had metal men in their midst all this time. He shook his head in hope that the forgotten secrets of their fathers would be enough to defeat the Hunwe, or at least make them leave again, assuming they could figure all the secrets out, of course. He didn't go far before he stopped to collect another blaster from the remains of several dead Hunwe, and was surprised that he could see blackened skulls inside of their helmets. He had expected that at the temperature the Hunwe had been burning, there would be nothing left. He hadn't been able to come within 20 feet of them when they had been on fire. It was a wonder the Hunwe armor appeared to be unaffected, but that might have just been an illusion caused by its dark color. When he had a chance, he would see if the armor had maintained its integrity. It was not a good time to investigate, because he could still feel the heat emanating from the armor as he leaned over one of the bodies. The Hunwe's blaster was underneath the remains, and it broke in half when Adar tried to kick it free. The place where it had been touching the Hunwe had melted. The blaster of the other Hunwe had melted as well, and was almost unrecognizable. Cursing, Adar moved to the next group of dead Hunwe, and went from body to body until he finally found a blaster that had fallen far enough from its owner that it had not been destroyed. He had been planning to return with Jorad and the others to gather up blasters from the dead, but it wasn't going to be as easy as he thought. Other blasters would have survived, but it looked like it might be one that was functional for every 10 they found. Once he had dealt with Terror, Adar would bring back those waiting in the arches. It might even be worth the trip to Vigorok to see if the Hunway there had been killed as well. Adar frowned. They would need to find more than a handful of blasters to make it worth the trip. Getting there might not take as long. There had to be a door in the arches that was close enough to Vigorok to avoid the 2-week journey. If the display Adar had seen coming from Darren's tablet was an indication there had been hundreds of Hunway surrounding the tower, maybe even thousands, some of those blasters would have survived as well. When Adar turned onto the street where he had last seen Terror, he was forced to a stop by a burning inferno. A bunch of dead Hunway had fallen atop one another during the tower's attack. Their armor had fused together and was still burning. The white flames rose high into the gray sky and blocked his view of the street beyond. Adar had planned to start looking for Terran Karn at the place where he'd seen them disappear because he wanted to follow in their tracks as close as he could. If Terra had killed Karn on their way to the arches, Adar wanted to know about it. The large white brick of the town hall was beginning to turn black, and another building, a church by the look of it, that was on the other side of the street was in danger of catching fire. Even if Adar had been armed with buckets of water and the men to carry them, he couldn't have done much. The intense heat made it impossible to get close to the flames. Even as he stared at the sight, he was forced to retreat. It was either that or risk being burned by the fire. The cobblestones beneath the burning mass were hissing and cracking from the heat, and though he couldn't say for certain, it looked as though they were melting as well. He hoped any occupants in the church were already aware of the danger because he didn't have time to warn them. Forced back several more steps by the temperature, he did not hesitate any longer. He ran in the other direction until he came to a connecting alley. It was a tight squeeze between the buildings, but once he was in, he could straighten out and run. There were not cobblestones here, and he soon came to a patch of mud that had green residue on top. He tried to avoid thinking much about what it was as he slopped his way through to the other side. A door opened, and an old woman with a bucket appeared. She dumped out the contents and turned back inside without noticing him. As she moved, he caught a glimpse of her milky gray eyes and figured she was blind. He wondered if she was deaf as well and was unaware of the invasion. He stepped over the contents of the bucket without looking down and avoided thinking too much about the mud he had just pushed his way through. He was surprised that he hadn't been able to smell it, but his nose wasn't reporting anything other than the after effects of the burned Hunway. Burning Hunway, he amended, thinking of the heated mass that he had just avoided. Ter's confession rang through Adar's mind and had a jarring effect on him. With everything that had gone on, he had been able to keep it from overwhelming what had needed to be done. But now that the danger wasn't as immediate, he couldn't keep it at bay any longer. The words had been seared into his soul, and with them, a fire had rekindled that he had not felt in many years. It had been so long since he'd felt the anger associated with the death of his beloved Nellian that the intensity of it surprised him. It came with a flood of memories that he stuffed away into the furthest recesses of his mind. As he moved, Adar tried to figure out what Ter would do next. His instincts told him Ter wouldn't run. He would set a trap for Adar on the way to the arches. Ter probably suspected Karn would support Adar, or at the very least not get in Adar's way when he caught up with him. It was in Ter's best interest to see that Karn was not around when that happened. It would also be foolish for Ter to return to the arches unless he finished off both Karn and Adar so that there wouldn't be anybody around to contradict his story. Ter wouldn't want to return to Adar's father, Abel, unless he could report that Adar was no longer a threat. Because Ter had killed Nellian, it was not much of a leap to assume Abel had been involved as well. Abel was sly enough it wouldn't come back on him if the truth about Ter came out, but he'd still be upset with Ter for spilling the secret and then not finishing Adar off to keep it safe. Once Adar was clear of the mud, he sped up. If he had not been in a daze after his fight with Ter, he might have thought through the consequences a little better and realized the danger Karn was in. Melia, Adar thought, what if I'm wrong, and Ter goes straight back to the arches and slips away when no one's looking? He might have thought I was a goner anyway. I was surrounded by Hunway last he saw me. He had no way of knowing I had armed the tower. When Ter had been handled, Adar would have to decide what to do about his father. He could not let this go now he knew the truth. Ter had murdered Nellian for Abel. Adar was certain. He had never intended to return to Rarban. But with this new evidence, he would not be able to rest until he had confronted Abel about his role in Nellian's death. Adar had always lacked proof about Abel's involvement. He would get what he needed from Ter before he killed him. Dealing with Abel would not be as simple as killing Ter. Adar had promised his mother, who had been aware of the tension between Abel and himself, that he would never kill Abel. Adar had always suspected that his mother had secured a similar promise from Abel. This is why he killed Nellian, Adar thought bitterly. It was all my fault. My mother's promise had not extended to Nellian because she had not been a part of my life at the time. When Adar arrived at the next street, he looked over the human bodies he found there and determined Karn was not among them. None of them were the right height or build. The dead Hunwe were all too large to be turncoats. He was about to step out, but something made him pause. Uncertain what it was, he took a closer look. The street had a number of homes, along with a baker and a tailor shop. Most of the buildings were three stories high, but there was a tall gray brick home several houses down from where Adar stood peering out of the opening between buildings. At five stories high, it took up double the space of the other structures on either side. It was set back further from the street and had a well-tended garden in front. The shrubs had been pruned, and statues of a man and a woman dominated the front yard. Adar was unable to recognize whom they represented and assumed it was either the owners of the house or some of their ancestors. A waist-high fence enclosed the structure. After waiting for several counts, he decided it was safe enough and that he had just been hit with a wave of paranoia. He had not taken more than a few steps into the street when a couple of Hunwe came out of the five-story home. At first, Adar did not think much of it when he noticed them from the corner of his eye because they were short. He assumed they were human. He must have recognized something was wrong on a subconscious level because he turned without thinking. When he saw their black armor, he brought up his own blaster on instinct. Melia, Adar thought. It can't have been more than a few minutes since I last killed one of these human traitors, and already my guard is down. I'm either lazy or too focused. It was going to take a while for him to get used to seeing human eyes staring back at him from within that black armor of theirs. He could not be caught unaware like this again. He would be dead the next time he did. As he sighted his blaster in on the first, Adar was happy to see the turncoats still had not noticed him. He pulled the trigger, and a blast exploded out of the end of his weapon. Half a moment later, he heard the satisfying woomph of the blast plowing through the turncoat. A mist of blood and ash filled the space where the Hunwe turncoat had been standing as it was knocked over. It had only been a few weeks since Adar had first heard the sound of a blaster, and already he had become quite comfortable with it. It no longer filled him with terror as it once had. The man had gone over easier than his 2-foot-taller comrades. The Hunwe often weren't even fazed by the force of the blast when it hit them, though they still died if it hit them in a vital place, same as everybody. From what Adar could tell, the basic Hunwe anatomy was similar to a human. If they were hit by a blast in the middle of the chest, they seemed to die easily enough. Adar turned towards the other, but threw himself to the ground when he saw the turncoat had a blaster aimed in his direction. The turncoat fired as Adar fell. The blast came close enough to hitting him that he could feel the heat of it passing just over his back. He hit the cobblestones of the road with a jarring sensation. Pain shot up through his elbow as it met a jagged edge of a cobblestone that jutted up from the street. It was enough out of the way of the normal traffic that it had not been worn down with use or noticed by one of the city's engineers. Biting off a yelp of pain, Adar rolled to his knees and brought up his blaster, firing off a shot. The turncoat had already anticipated what Adar would do and had disappeared behind the fence. Adar aimed at the approximate location where the Hunwe had gone and fired several shots through the treated wood. He nodded his head when he heard another woomph as the blast made contact with his target. He stood, already mid-stride in the direction of the large home, when he noticed three more Hunwe turncoats had followed out from behind the first two. They all had blasters pointed his direction.
That's it for this week. I hope you have enjoyed the show. Tune in next week for another installment of the Dan Decker Books Podcast. One last thing before you go. Sign up for my newsletter at dandeckerbooks.com, and you will receive a free ebook copy of War of the Fathers. The text, audio, and music for this show are all copyrighted by Dan Decker, all rights reserved. This podcast is published by Xander Revolutions LC.